Welcome to the Fuller Chasey Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 12th of November, and I'm recording at 7:57 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time here in London. I'm recording earlier than usual because Wall Street's had an early close. Not all markets are quite closed, but it's a very quiet day nonetheless, and I think we've got the information we need to work on for this audio. So, here we go. Stock markets. Well, it's still that Trump rally. And a number of people are thinking or starting to ask, is it also a Trump bull market? Well, at least in the short term, it certainly is, because it has pushed most Wall Street indices to new all-time highs. And it's also supporting a number of emerging markets and other markets, just other markets generally around the world. I'll give you a quick romp through today's action. Looking at the Asia-Pacific on my Bloomberg screen, the 19 major markets in that, 18 major markets in that area, and it's 19, they're all higher. And some substantial gains, getting up to nearly 2% in India. Well, that's the best of them. China continues to work its way a bit higher, given the reflationary efforts that are taking place. India benefited a little bit, maybe, from that additional weakness in its currency. Currency is going to be another big story in here, and more on that in a few moments. But we also look at the European indices, and they are all higher in here today. Best gains, Switzerland, up over 1%. The rest of them are modest gains, and nevertheless, though, quietly steady in here overall. Most of these gains actually in the European markets are on order of, or on average would be around a fifth of a percentage, fifth to a quarter of a percentage point. And looking at the US markets, well, impressive here, because the S&P, that's closed up 8.63. That's nearly a fourth of a percentage point. And all those U.S. indices look to be higher. Canada, Mexico, also higher. The only decline, actually, that I see on my Bloomberg screens is Brazil, but it's tiny. It's less than a tenth of a percentage point, and that was significantly reduced by late trading here overall. So still very much in form, as you can see. So benefiting from the Trump election rally, and historically, when you get a change of government, a change of party, I think even more importantly, you tend to get a little bit of a honeymoon period, and that's what we're seeing in here. But also, that's going to tie in with the Santa Claus rally, and of course that carries through the end of the year. And then historically, this period from November through the first quarter is one of outperformance by stock markets on average. So that is all in play here, and could add some further gains going forward. We would need to look at what could possibly go wrong in here, and I think first, technically, since there's so much uncertainty in these markets, you need to look at some technical levels. And for these major indices that have benefited with Trump's win of the presidency, you go right back and look at those lows. I mean, the S&P, for instance, I think it was on November 4th, and selling off just ahead of the election, and then strong rally subsequently. So we would have to take out those early November lows, until that happens, and it will happen at some point, but until that happens, I would give the upside the benefit of the doubt. And if we get stronger rallies, of course, we'll be able to raise those levels would show signs of trouble. But right now, it's still positive, really all go. Buyers in demand. The shorts have actually been hammered in those markets. Now let's move on to government bonds. And the Trump presidency has also coincided with a sharp rise in those bond yields. They were already up off their July lows. And I have said on a number of occasions and written on a number of occasions that those July lows that we saw in the government bond yields, those are probably once in a lifetime, if not longer, in terms of their duration. I'm not sure that we'll get another era in the next credit crisis, whenever that occurs, and I'm not expecting it anything like that to be imminent. But I'm not sure, I was going to say, that we will see the same level of quantitative easing that we have this time around. But what's more important than that, because that's my conjecture, is that we saw a 36-year bull market. And it was one of the greatest bull markets of all time. People who bought government bonds at those scary yields that they had all those many years ago have made fortunes. But that's over. And we're now in a bear phase. I don't think the bear phase is going to retrace more than a fifth at most of the bull phase that had actually taken place. Why would I be reasonably confident on that? Well, one big factor, I think, would be that we're no longer in the same sort of inflationary environment overall. That doesn't mean that inflation won't return. I think inflation will return, but it'll still be at a relatively moderate level. And I think the key factor here in helping to keep inflation low will be the accelerating rate of technological development. And that is positive in many respects in terms of efficiency, but it also keeps a lid on wages, and we won't get the crunching wage increases that we were seeing, for instance, back in the 1970s. That just won't work. Because people can replace workers far too easily. So that's a good reason for thinking that I feel that inflation is not going to be anything like it has been in the past. And also, we're unlikely to see oil prices shooting upwards, which can also add inflationary pressures before causing big overall recessions. Okay, so just taking those first two sectors of the investment field, equities still be long, but we have to be very careful about what we wish to be long of. And right now, Wall Street is the informed market and being helped by the appreciation of the US dollar in terms of overall returns when compared on a global basis. As far as government bonds are concerned, I wouldn't touch them. Now, if you have to have, or if you're required to have, some sort of government bonds in your portfolio, you want the shortest duration, or take the tips as inflation hedged government bonds. Otherwise, I wouldn't touch any of those. Now, what? Let's look at the currencies in here, because they're certainly having a very big influence. And I've been preparing my presentation for the markets now on Monday. It's the time I will be away I won't have any written comment of the day on Monday, but Owen will be back. I mentioned that because I was looking at a number of the MSCI, those Morgan Stanley MSCI indices, which are all calculated in US dollars, I believe. And looking at the way they have performed, well, it's been pretty horrendous. If you look at Asia Pacific, and I show that ex-Japan, but even with Japan in, the Japanese yen is not that strong. They would be, they're way behind on Wall Street on a when calculated or when prices are shown in U.S. dollars. That's the key point. Non-dollar assets are way underperforming in these stock markets. So that applies to Latin America. It applies to emerging markets. It applies to frontier markets. And that raises a question, because if you look at the charts, it's just a lamentable underperformance. For the most part, they haven't gone anywhere since the end of 2009, early 2010. That's quite shocking, really, when you think what Wall Street and some of the other stock markets have actually achieved since then. So that raises the question, is are they a buy? Well, in my view, they're not a buy right now, but I think that they will be a buy when we next get a significant shakeout on Wall Street. And a significant shakeout is not a 5% or even a 10% move. But over the next 4 years or so, the scope for cyclical bear trends, including for Wall Street, are quite high. And I wouldn't be surprised if that didn't happen. So I would wait. But that what we're seeing right now is people moving money away from all these frontier markets and emerging markets because they are underperforming to such an extent in U.S. dollar terms. So that is setting up scope for quite attractive recoveries. But again, I wouldn't go in there just yet because we'll also see some havoc due to all the dollar borrowing that had actually occurred. Now, the dollar borrowing a few years ago had occurred because the dollar had been in a long secular bear market. And what a lot of these emerging markets found is that their currencies were too strong. That was hurting their growth. Currencies were too strong because the dollar was so weak. So what they did was buy U.S. dollars, and they did so with abandon to help to keep their own currencies down. And, of course, the dollar is a highly liquid market. We've got really a global dollar currency market more than ever before, according to reports. And the yields on dollars were lower. So there are all sorts of reasons for going into U.S. dollars. That's until the dollar started to break up out of its trading range a couple of years ago and begin the first leg of what I'm convinced is a new secular bull market for the U.S. dollar. And the second leg, after a lengthy consolidation, the second leg to the upside for the U.S. dollar is now underway, and that has been triggered by the Trump election. So he's not even president yet, but he's having a big influence on the market. Equities love all of his big spending programs, bringing all that money back into the U.S. economy, lowering taxes, all the infrastructure spending, that saying that's going to boost the U.S. economy and raise corporate profits. And I think they're absolutely right in that assessment. It'll also push inflation up higher. It'll also mean that the Fed will have, in my opinion, not only the December rate hike, that's guaranteed, but they will have another couple of quarter point rate hikes minimum in 2017. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we don't see more than two rate hikes in 2017. But a lot of that will depend on how the rest of the global economy is doing. And of course, if the dollar is too strong, that will be a big restraining factor on what actually happens going forward. And there is that is a a big risk that we have to watch out for. And a strong dollar would also cause more selling of the U.S. Treasury bonds, because the Chinese, they've been bailing out of U.S. government bonds. Mind you, they've done incredibly well in them. But heavy selling, that's helping to push the yields in those U.S. Treasuries higher. They touched that 240 level on the 10 years in here again today, and then backed off. But we're just seeing a little consolidation, which I think will be really quite brief and quite shallow in terms of the pullback. And then I think we'll see those Treasury yields push higher. And now remember, so they've touched 240 a couple of times. when they get up above 3%, or as they move up above 3%, and we'll see that next year, and that will then make government bonds a little bit more competitive. Whereas right now, the selling of bonds is one of the factors fueling the rise in equities, and that's not just this cycle, it happens every cycle. The initial rises in government bonds, when it becomes clear to investors that a government bond bull market is over and those yields start to push higher, then investors come out and switch into equities. And that goes on for a while until those, now not all of them make those switches, some of them just go into the short-durated bonds and so on, but you take my point. It creates more liquidity for the stock market, and excuse me, and that continues until the bond yields become sufficiently attractive to become a headwind for stock markets. Now, where might they become a headwind? Well, my guess, as I've just said, that the bond yields start to become a little bit more inviting, I think particularly for non-U.S. investors who see their own yields still quite low, albeit edging higher, but they might decide that they actually like those U.S. yields above that 3% level. But above 4%, then I think that the government bond markets, or the U.S. Treasury market, I should say, above 4% will be offering some genuine competition. And if it goes much higher than that, for instance, if it were to get up to 5%, which is the most that I could envisage, then we would be in bear market territory in equities. Now, I'm just going to have a quick little cough here. That tells you these are live, unedited audios. Okay. Well, so much for those bonds. Now let's look at commodities. Precious metals are a little, well, they're mixed in here today. I was going to say they are a little softer, but palladium and silver are a little higher in here right now. whereas platinum is down sharply, down to $908. Remember, that had a high up at $1,200 not long ago. Why didn't I sell my platinum when it was up there? Well, that's an irrelevant digression for you. Gold is also a little lower in here, $1,184 right now. And incidentally, while I'm moving along here, Brazil at the moment is on the upside. I said not all these stock markets are closed, so every single stock market that I'm looking at is up on the day if Brazil holds that tiny gain. Now, back to these precious metals. They're cheap. That doesn't mean they can't get cheaper. They're interesting, but this dollar is too strong. And I think there's every chance that the dollar index pushes up to around that 2000 and, I beg your pardon, start again on that. I think there's every chance that the dollar index will push up. You know, it's broken above that high level at 100. It's currently at 101.49. It's down a little bit in here today. And I think it'll get up to 110. I've also, this is pure conjecture on my part, but I think that if the U.S. Treasury and the Fed want to intervene to keep the dollar from running up too sharply, and they will, they do, then that would be a sensible area to come in, or at least that's the way I would play it if I were running that Treasury, heaven forfend. Okay, so I'd be a little wary of those precious metals, but they're not expensive, and when the dollar is not terrifying investors and driving them out, then they'll be interesting. Meanwhile, the industrial metals are holding up really quite well, and that's because of Trump's big spending program and also China's big spending program that's underway right now, China building more cities. I'd hoped, as I said yesterday, for a bigger spending program from the UK. Maybe we'll get that a little later on. I mean, we really should see at least 1% of GDP on in terms of additional spending, and some people are saying 2%. We're not seeing anything anywhere near that, judging from the autumn statement, but that can be changed as the as we get into 2017, and no doubt it will be, in my opinion. But the overall trend is towards among treasuries around the globe now is switching to let's have some more fiscal spending. So following the Trump lead, following the China lead, and Japan will certainly be doing more fiscal spending. And that will certainly cause growth to pick up somewhat, and that will increase the demand for these industrial metals. And that's what the market's been discounting here recently. Copper, for instance, which has been on a tear, remember that was the dog among the industrial metals for such a long time, but up another 7, just over 7 cents in here again today, up to 267.85 cents. Though that sector remains very much in form, and their shares remain pretty much in form. Now, other commodities, well, it's really going to depend on supply as far as the agricultural commodities are concerned. Supply is always the big variable, particularly for industrial commodities, because the demand increases very gradually most of the time, and demand very occasionally slows a little bit for the agricultural commodities, but in line with global GDP growth, pretty modest at the moment, but also rising population. That's also slowed down a little bit, but both those trends are still in terms of favoring growth and population increases. And that increases the demand for food. So demand for these agricultural commodities is increasing, but it really all depends on what actually happens to the actual supply side. And that is really down to weather and whether or not we see any diseases, and also what sort of predators, you know, locust invasions, that sort of thing. But primarily it's weather. That's the big variable for these agricultural commodities. And that isn't something that I cannot forecast really going forward, except in line with the mild global warming that we've obviously been seeing since the 1970s. I would say that that actually helps production more often than not. It doesn't mean we can't get droughts in some areas, but it does mean that there tends to be a little bit more moisture for the most part, and that helps growth. So I've run through the four categories there. Last thing I'll say is, in terms of equities generally, what to actually expect. Well, I think you get a choppy environment for the next 3-4 years, as I've said previously, and the chances are good that, and we'll have some cyclical bear trends. And there, we've had some cyclical bear trends over the last 3 or 4 years, certainly in some of those emerging markets. But it hasn't been all that bad an environment overall. And indeed, most investors, if you've been in, particularly if you've been in some of these developed markets, you've really done quite well. So I think we'll see, though, that probably choppy environment for the next 3 or 4 years. Then I think we'll have scope for a secular bull market in equities, and the big lead factors there will be technological innovation. That is the most important one by far. The second most important one by far is that energy prices will be even lower at that time. I know people are talking about them being higher, but I don't believe it for a minute. You won't see crude oil moving to the upside on any significant basis. Incidentally, I hadn't mentioned crude oil when I was doing this other commodities, so I just dropped back to that. Crude oil got slammed in here today because, surprise, surprise, David says cynically, Russia is dragging its heels on making any sort of cutbacks. So they've got a meeting. I think it's next week, big meeting. Frankly, OPEC has the potential to drive the OPEC plus Russia. They have the potential to drive oil above $50 a barrel if they institute some cutbacks. We'll see that. Won't go a whole lot above that level, but, you know, maybe 55, 60 for a while. Or they can drive it back down to 40 if the whole deal for cutbacks falls apart. We will soon know, because that is in the hands of that OPEC plus Russia. It's in their hands. I would say that complete disorganization and the fact that they don't like each other very much, to put it mildly, argues against a decent agreement. But if common sense and financial need were to rule, they would have an agreement. We'll see. And on that note, all the very best to all of you. Have a fantastic day. fantastic weekend.